بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. روحوا قلوبكم ساعة فساعة. Now and then relax your minds. The mind also gets exhausted as the body gets exhausted. And the mind requires something to ease in the exhaustion. If you allow the exhaustion to continue, pile up, then it can turn out to be an explosion. So don't bring yourself to that point where there will be an explosion and then you cannot manage the situation. So you can see in a situation that you're getting worked up or you're getting exhausted, then move out, relax, become calm, and then come up again. But if you're going to force yourself or try to prove your levels of tolerance, then perhaps you may just explode. So when you see that you're getting to a point of exhaustion, tiredness, or the discussion is becoming a little bit more serious, then gradually, gracefully just move away. Don't go and stretch yourself to the full length of the discussion. What happens to our minds that each person wants to have the last say. I want to have the last say and you will do the same. You will want to have the last say. And then the discussion becomes a little bit heated up and then it ends up in a dispute or a debate, and then you may say some stiff word, he may say some hard word, and as a result there's a severance of relationship. So don't bring yourself to that point. You saw that the discussion was going well, person is understanding, then go on, because he's understanding, he wants to accept, he wants to take. Ibrahim alayhi salam had engaged the king, رَبِّيَ الَّذِي يُحْيِي وَيُمِيتِ. My Rabb gives life and takes away life. But he saw that that king wasn't in the position of understanding. So then he changed the whole course of the discussion and he says, my Rabb brings out the sun from the east and you bring it out from the west. So he saw in one line the man can't understand. He don't want to reason correctly. If you're going to go on, then perhaps it will be higher than his level of understanding. I need to get the point across. I don't need to impress him. See, sometimes we get our facts mixed up. One is going to impress the person and one is to get a point across. So when you talk about that bring the sun from the west, obviously he's exhausted or finished. No argument left. So sometimes it happens that I want to come up with my point. What I'm saying is right, you must accept that. And then we don't realize that in that entire discourse, in the entire discussion, we have lost it. We haven't gained anything. So the simple thing is either we move out of the discussion, we don't have a strong ground to stand upon, which this person will buy, or it is that we are getting lost, we're losing ourselves. So both ways, we haven't won the situation. The idea is to win the situation, to understand, get to some understanding, and get a better relationship amongst Muslims. Not to impress upon the person that I am on right, and you on the wrong. That's a secondary thing. To show myself is a secondary thing. Whether you achieve that or you don't achieve that, it's a secondary thing. But what you need to achieve is the right objectives, the right goals. So therefore, for most people to get into discussions is not a healthy thing. لَا خَيْرَ فِي كَثِيرٍ مِّن نَجْوَاهُمْ. In most discussion, that secret discussion, or that open discussion is not a good discussion. There is no good in that discussion. The words of the Quran, there is no good in that discussion. Because the Quran knows our nature. Everybody has got an ego. You cannot say that you don't have an ego. And your ego can be trampled upon, right? Someone can trample upon your ego and you feel. And then when you feel about your ego, then you want to come into the defense. When you come into your defense, then he also has got an ego. He wants to also come onto his defense. What happens? Has anybody won? Nobody won. Both lost. This person lost, that person lost. The respectable, easy thing was to move away. Now you can see now it's going in a different tangent, in a different line, now move away. Almost Sayyid Khan Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi says that when this Jamaat work had started off, the 1930s, 40s, when the Jamaat work started off, so if Jamaat was sent in a certain direction, then Hazrat Muhammad Ilyas Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi, Allah Ta'ala fill his grave with Noor, he used to send up a backup Jamaat to see that it's going in the straight line. Because he's starting off now, it hasn't yet been established. Once it's established and it's moving, so you have a different set of principles. And when it's, when you're taking it off, when it's taken off, then you work differently. And when you're establishing it, then you move differently. So anyway, the same in Islam as well. Everything came up in Islam gradually. The whole Meccan life, wine wasn't declared forbidden. The whole Meccan life, the gambling wasn't declared forbidden. The whole Meccan life usually wasn't forbidden. Imagine serious things wasn't forbidden. So you're going gracefully. You're relating to the person that you are talking and discussing. You're relating to the person. He can relate. You can identify. He can identify. Now there is some familiarity and there is some understanding. Now he wants to buy whatever you say he wants to buy. Because with that familiarity, that confidence came in. When that confidence came in, now that person knows that you are meaning right, you're intending right, and you're thinking right, you're going right. So he wants to take whatever you are selling. If, for example, I take out a product, I take out a new cold drink, nobody's going to buy it because they don't have an established name. And Coca-Cola has to take out a new product, say, you know, Coke has taken it, it's an established company. So everybody wants to buy onto that because it's established. They got a reputation, people have got the level of confidence, so they will go with that company. So the first level is confidence, familiarity, respect, understanding. That's the first level. In that, you have to go very gracefully. See, like we have to set certain systems in the home, right? New in the marriage, or both of us have been off the tangent, whether we are new in the marriage, or we have been off the tangent, not practicing on deen. But now both of us have to go to Jannat, inshallah, by the will of Allah Ta'ala, and we need to complement each other. So how do we go? Do we go on a war path, or do we go on a love path to Jannat? The war path is a difficult path. Right? Because then I'll swear you Jahannami. Right? And she'll swear me also, she'll say, no, you are the worst. Darkil asfali minan nar. The lowest pit of Jahannam. So, who went to Jannat then? She's also going to Jahannam, you also going to Jahannam, right? Anybody went to Jannat then after? Nobody went to Jannat. So, the easier way is go on a love path. Say, no, hey, you, inshallah, Allah will take you to Jannat then. You, Allah will give you Firdaus. So, that's a love path. But you see, the feeling, when I swore you and I said, I insulted you, you're a Jahannami. You're a kafir. And she did the same. If she didn't say it verbally, she said it some other way. But she also said, no, you are the lowest pit of Jahannam. So both of them, you see, the feeling is gone off. There's no respect. There's no feeling. There's no respect for emotion. So I don't want to listen to your talk. So it's a barrier between me and you. I mean, bainina wa bainika hijabun. So we need to compliment with each other, compliment each other. And say, all right, now how can I work a plan for her? And how can she work a plan for me? How can we compliment each other? We wasted our lives, alright, whatever happened, happened now. But how do we complement each other and go to that path of Jannat? Running that person down is not going to work out. I'm going to run him down, he's going to run me down. Well, I'm going to find faults for him, find faults in him, and he's going to find faults in me. It's not going to work for each other. Because we believe in Malik Yawmiddin, Allah is going to take the judgment, finally. When he's going to take the judgment, so our judgment doesn't hold in any way, it doesn't hold. I would say, no, this person like this, he's a rubbish, he's a nonsense, he's like this. Allah's judgment is not subject to our opinion. His judgment is not subject to what we feel. His judgment is absolutely independent. When his judgment is absolutely independent, then why should we go so deep in that person's life? Alright, on the surface we saw something wrong, we could correct it, we corrected it, And we continue to do lives. To go so deep into the person that we forget ourselves. Is that the right thing? Sometimes it happens to us when we hate the person. Then we want to take him to the cleaners. Every small problem he's got. We'll nail him down. We'll pull him out. We'll scrub him out. But if only we could scrub ourselves to the level that we're scrubbing him. If we only could scrub our own selves. See? We could have polished that person. We could have only polished our own selves. We're talking about him. Perhaps we've got the weakness within us. So the better thing is to look into your own self and look at your own weakness. Right? Al-Mawad Thami Sahib Rahmatullahi was the mujaddid of his zamana. Right? And he would say that Allah Pak has given me, I have come with work for 100 years. Work for 100 years. And true, all his kitabs, or nearly all his kitabs, are acceptable. Every library of the world, people know about it. Allah was on Sheikh now from Umman, Baskat Umman. And he knows Hakimul Ummat, Al-Mawad Thami Rahmatullahi. Whereas he doesn't know one word of Urdu, but he knows Al-Mawad Thami Rahmatullahi. So everybody identifies with him. So he says, when I see a weakness within myself, I see there's a problem within myself, then I discuss, I talk about it. I talk about it. And I talk about it, and because of me talking about it in a public audience, then alhamdulillah, I get the tawfiq to make amal upon it. And the reason behind it is, that in the audience, there must be someone that has got ikhlas. And because of his ikhlas, Allah Ta'ala accepts my talk, number one. Number two is, my mind goes in certain very, very, very unique ideas. I get some unique ideas of the problem, the ways to bring about a solution to it, and the veracity of that problem, how evil that is. Because of those people that are around, their barakat and these type of thoughts go to my mind. Alhamdulillah, as a result, if I've got a problem, then that problem just subsides, goes down. The problem just goes down. Now, he is at that level, a mujaddid of the time. The great luminaries, Al-Mawlana Shaykhul Islam used to come and visit him. Al-Mawlana Muhammad Ilyas Sahib used to come and visit him. But now, he is so conscious about himself. At that level, when he's like a king in spiritualism and righteousness, but then he's so conscious about himself. He says, I found within myself some level of anger. And then I used to be concerned about it until I visited one Hakim. Now you got an ancient doctor, you call him Hakim, right? I went and visited him. When I visited him, I saw very high levels of endurance. So the way people are carrying on. But the way he was controlling himself, he says, I was so impressed that for the rest of my life it impressed upon me. It impacted upon me. My levels of tolerance had then increased. But now that is when a person comes with an open heart, with an open mind. I need to benefit. I am wrong. I need to correct myself. I need to rectify myself. I have to sleep in my grave. I have to get it sorted out before I get there. Yeah. So anyway, we're talking about Al-Mawlana Sayyid Khan Sahib Rahmatullah Ali. And he says that Al-Mawlana Ilyas Sahib Rahmatullah Ali should send up a follow-up jamaat. So the follow-up jamaat was meant to see that everything is going in the line as per the mansha of the Buzurgana Deen, whatever they've got in their minds, that must be carried out. See. The importance of this, you know, you can't over-exaggerate this. You can't do haq to what they have done. See. The importance of company, companionship, etc. That companionship gives you the real sweetness, the real flavor, the real texture of Deen. And you don't have that company for a long, extended period. Really, you don't have that. You have to be with them, in and out with them. Over a period of time, that level of maturity sets in. But you have to be with them. You have to be with them. And then only that maturity sets in. Otherwise, it doesn't set in. But that has to also be for an extended period of time. Look at any of these Buzurgana Deen and the time that they are given to their elders. And thereafter, Allah Ta'ala accepted them. They had given that time to their elders, and thereafter Allah Ta'ala had accepted them. They didn't just get that acceptance straight. Allah Ta'ala could have given it straight. But that level of acceptance came after they had spent that time with their mashayikh. Otherwise, you get the wrong end of Deen. Today one youngster, quite concerned, quite an understanding person. In fact, he's got a level of commitment as well. But I want to show you the importance of association. Now, in concern, as a matter of concern, he comes up to me and he asks, they say you must chew our food well. So what is the sunnah tariqah? How many times do we chew our food? Now you see, he doesn't have the flavor of deen. When he's asking this question here, that means he hasn't understood deen. And why he hasn't understood deen? Because the association is not as fair it is desired. Right. So he asks this type of questions that are not related. Then I have to tell him, by just worry about six things. The managing your eyes, your ears, your tongue, your heart, your time, and association. Manage these five, six things, shall it will come right. These type of things, don't worry about it. One day, 90 years old of age, then I tell you how many times you must chew it. But now, you just carry on with this thing. Don't get into this finer, so such a finer thing you got. Sometimes it happens to people, they leave out the major things, and the finer things, they become too particular. They, you know, misusing the eyes, misusing the ears, misusing the tongue. And they ask, you know, well, must eat salt before the meals or after the meals. What extremes? What extremes? The eyes is misused, the tongue is misused, the ears is misused. A small little things, which whether it is debatable whether it is a sunnah or not a sunnah, that will become so hard upon. And the misuse of the eyes, misuse of the ears, misuse of the tongue, that's gone. And you're not concerned about it. Is it balancing up? I ask you. I don't say that you don't practice the smaller sunnah. What I'm saying is, get it in place, get everything in perspective, then talk about these things here. You haven't got the basic things right, and you're talking about it. Like, you know, when you're sitting to eat, you got a main course and you got a side course. Side course, maybe some lettuce, right? Now, he's got no main course. He's got no main course, absolutely no curry, kishi, nothing at all. He's got a bundle of salad. And I ask him, well, what, you know, how much eat a salad? Must cut it like this, cut it that way, cut it this way, how much eat it, how much must eat? If I get the main course first, right, then talk about the salad. You don't have the main course, and you're talking about this lettuce here. So not that lettuce is, you're not concerned about the side course, but get your priorities right, get the thing in perspective, try and understand that thing. That understanding will come with this association. As Umarji Sahib Rahmatullah was explaining the same point, you know. So he says, one person, youngster, made one girl pregnant, right? So his father or someone had to caution him, "Bhai, you had to do it, then why didn't you use some type of caution, you know, some type of precaution you should have done? You went to that extreme, you want to make this woman pregnant." So he said, "No, I heard the ulama said that this is makruh." Hey, he went right to that extreme and went and damaged that person's life, total, finished, destroyed that life. Right? That was nothing. Now the small little makuru now, you know, to use that, whatever, condom, whatever else. Now that, he made such a big issue of that, and he went and did such a thing. You see, the priorities get all mixed up, upside down. So the reason for that is they don't understand the flavor of deen. They don't understand the texture of deen. They don't understand the taste of deen. They don't understand it. When they don't understand the taste of deen, this is what's going to happen. See the importance of sitting with these people, associating with them. Overall, I don't say you become the most perfect person, but genuinely you'll find the taste of deen. You'll understand what is deen all about. And you don't have these people here, then you're going to go from one extreme to the other. You're going to be hopping around, and you'll be guessing around, and you'll think this is what I'm doing is deen. The greatest tragedy will be that you will think and you'll be convinced that what I'm doing is deen. That's what you'll hold on to. And you'll hold on to it so much that you'll feel that what I'm doing is deen, everything else is not deen. So anyway, we're talking of Sayyid Khan Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi. This one Jamaat was sent towards Lahore, and Mawlana Sayyid Sahib's Jamaat is sent as a follow-up to go and check on this first Jamaat, what's going on. So the whole Jamaat of people, as they came up to Lahore, it was sometime in the night, so that they felt, well, at that time, India wasn't yet partitioned from Pakistan. See? So it was easy movement, so they moved on across. And they felt that the most suitable thing now is to go to one relative's house. Mawlana Sayyid Sahib had some relatives there, so he went to the relative's house. It was at night now. half past 8, 9 o'clock, so they read the Isha Namaz, a little bit of talk, chit-chat, you know. We took all the trouble to come from Delhi right to Lahore, such a long journey. Any khidmat, what can I do for you? That's the normal chit-chat, right? So he says, no, we are sent to do tabligh. Came straight, and he told him that we are sent to do tabligh here. So that uncle is now a very educated person. He's an educationist, right? Very high in that zamana. For that zamana, very, very educated person. So his response was, ke puri Delhi mein Islam phail gaya ke Lahore tak ab deen ko phailane ke liye aaya. You did all tabligh with everybody, Muslims in Delhi, and you come right to Lahore to come and spread Islam here. Right. Now this type of statements, right, are inciting. They can spur anybody up, right? It's an inciting statement. Now this type of inciting statements you'll get all the time. Some people are like that. They just talk, say anything that's up their head, they let it go. And others say, no, let's screen it. One screen, one level, second level, third level. I need to check and filter the statement of mine through three levels before I can really utter that. I can't just utter it. Whatever is coming to my mind, I can't just utter it. I can't let it just go. I must filter it so many times before I let it out. So, anyway, Syed Khan Sahib Rahmatullah didn't reply to this. Just talk about idhar udhar, how's Lahore, what's the people, what's the population here, whatever. Digress the whole subject and continued. Right. So the following morning they had breakfast and then they took leave, you know, to the masjid. They told them the particulars, etc., which masjid they will be in. And as they pitched up to the masjid, the talim was being conducted. So Maulana Sayyid Sahib Rahmatullah, because he was sent as a follow-up, so he took hold of the talim. Now at that time, you can't now act humble now, just be like, you nothing now. You've been sent for a certain cause, for a certain reason. When you sent for that certain reason, then you must do that. You must accomplish that. Like now, you send an inspector in a maktab. Now the inspector becomes like a student. So what must the students do? What must the ustad do? So when you are sent for a certain task, for a certain job, you have to accomplish it. Now it's been sent for a certain job, for a certain mission, to see that this is being streamlined correctly. So you have to take that position. Now he takes the kitab and he starts with the talim. So as he starts with the talim, then he discusses some topics, right? He's an alim, and Muhammad Ilyas Abrahamta has got the level of confidence in him, so he can, right? Now this is another point, what we need to understand. Some people can do it. Some people can do it, they can discuss, and the jamaat, whichever movement they are with, they will acknowledge their talking, their speech, and their discussion. But if we see Mawla Sayyid Sahib doing something, and we imitate him, that's an imitation. It's not real. We are not at that position, so we don't imitate him. We remain at the level we are. He will be at the level he is. He has gone through so much of sacrifice, so much of training, so much of disciplining from Muhammad Ilyas Sahib Rahmatullahi. Muhammad has got that level of confidence in him. That he can post him singly, you go and live in Madina Munawara, and you control the jamaat from there. He's got that level of confidence in him. But me and you, can we post ourselves to that position? We can't. It's not right. That's an imitation. An imitation would remain an imitation. Real is real. Imitation is imitation. And really, when we try and imitate this type of people, then we can embarrass ourselves. We can bring some disgrace to ourselves. Because we're not yet there, and we stayed with some buzruq, or we went for a few days in jamaat, and we begin to pretend like old workers, very, very old workers. Or shaykh with some buzuk and some ulama, then you start giving fatwas and whatever. See? Now that's not right. Remain in your place, he'll remain in his place. When you write, then he'll tell you, now you write or you write. Now if you do what I'm doing, it's alright. But you're not yet ripe. You just seen a few things, you witnessed a few things. So by witnessing, you don't become the real thing. You know, if all of us just could understand our positions, inshallah, I feel 70-80% or the problems will be over. And everybody can recognize the other. Who is he? What level of respect I need to show him? And who am I? And what confines and what parameters I need to be living within? We live within that parameters, we don't bring problems. But when we extend ourselves, and say, no, I got this authority, I must be respected like this, I must be recognized like this, people mustn't tramp on my toes, then you're asking for trouble. See? Now that is why I repeat these things here often. We need this people's association every moment, every second. For a long, prolonged period of time we need to be with them. So that real texture, the real flavor of deen, we begin to feel the thing within us. It's established, not just, we have not just perceived it, but it's gone penetrated deep into the system. Otherwise we've seen it, right? But has it penetrated the system? Right? Like a Buzruk comes around, like right? Abdul Qasim Sahib came, right? So we had the honor of being in his company, right? Now we felt a certain change within ourselves, but that change is for a short period. Maybe a day, a week, a month, or 2 months, we see some change within ourselves. But now, has this change taken its root within our system? So that's a different thing. That is why we'll find in the Jamaat also, they say, keep coming. 3 days, 40 days, 3 days, 40 days, keep the Taluk, Nizamuddin, etc. So over a prolonged period of time, now the Jamaat characteristic, the real character of the Jamaat, then rubs onto you. And if you just did once, 4 months, and thereafter you felt the actual character of the Jamaat is rubbed onto you, then you're wrong. The real flavor of the Jamaat will fall onto you, will rub onto you after a long, long period. You kept the Taluk with Nizamuddin, you're going, coming, you're seeing this person here, seeing that person, how this thing works, how it operates, what is supposed to be said in this occasion, what is supposed to be said in this occasion. In the period of Hazrat Imam Inamul Hasan Sahib Rahmatullah, this was how they approached the whole thing. And now this is how they're approaching it. So you see all this, the changing conditions, situations, and how it needs to be adjusted and modified. You're seeing it all the time. So as you're seeing it, you're improving, you're correcting yourself. But you saw it once and you said, no, I got it, and I'm just going to stick to that. Really, then you got it wrong. So this Buzurgana Deen, this association is so important all the time. Until the thing hasn't become like your nature, it hasn't become your second nature, it hasn't become your character, you will definitely need them. And that's what they call that nisbat. You know, one is in ikasi and one is islahi. That islahi, that second level, is as though, you know, the first level is where I went to a perfume shop, right? And staying there for that half an hour or so, I saw that my body was, you know, some of the perfume fell onto my body or fell onto my clothing. So I began to experience it for a day or so, day one, 2 days. After 2 days, everything was worn out, everything was gone. So there was some tawajjuh, there was some goodness that was felt and perceived for those moments. But it was short-lived, 1 day, 2 days and gone, finish. So that is the first level of nisbat and the first level of barakat that you get in the association. And the second level of barakat is of a higher category, of a higher level. They call that the islahi, right? Now that is that level where as though the misal and the example they give, as though the river is running, right? A massive river is running. Now you need to take off, you need to branch it off into your farm. Right? You need to branch it off into your farm. So initially it was a small little rivulet that was going. If some big boat had come on the way, the whole thing would have been stopped. But now you created such a big branch into your farm that it's coming with force. It is a boulder or there's a big tree that's fallen, this thing will just wash it off. So now you've enjoyed the second level of nisbat with this Buzurgana Deen, that it's coming, the water is coming, and it's coming with a force. When it's coming with a force, there can't be any obstruction, inshallah. By the will of Allah Ta'ala, there can't be any obstruction. So you have gone and you have progressed to such a level. Now as though the colors are your colors. You think what they think. You behave like what they behave. You understand things like how they understand things. Now you have progressed actually. Now doing anything against that routine becomes awkward for you. Feel uncomfortable. What's going in their mind comes into your mind. What thoughts run and flow through them, flow through you. Now that is the second level, like Abu Bakr Siddiq radiallahu anhu enjoyed when the Sulh Hudaybiyah was taking place, and the answers that was given by Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam were the exact answers that were given by Abu Bakr Siddiq radiallahu anhu. So the same thoughts that flowed into the Mubarak heart of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam flowed into the heart of Abu Bakr Siddiq radiallahu anhu. So that's the second level. See this importance of association, importance of that company, until that thing flows, it flows. Now you're strong. Now inshallah, nothing will obstruct that flow, nothing will obstruct that current. But unfortunately, we can't understand this thing, see. We can't understand it. And the tawfiq only comes from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Really, when I look at all these things here, I see the sincerity amongst people. But then together with that, with that sincerity, there is a line of action that is required. Not just sincerity, but sincerity with a line of action that is conforming to that sincerity. If it is just sincerity, then it is half a job. It's a great job, but it is half, one third the job. Then the line of action that comes to support it, that's the second thing. Deen thereafter becomes like natural. You know, you can't live without it. Like how, if you didn't eat supper, can you sleep? You didn't eat. All day you didn't eat. Well, you get the sleep. Then you must eat. Then you don't need any fazail ta'am. You need to read a kitab on fazail food. Like you need fazail amal, right? Then you want to do things. You'll get prompted and you'll get spurred up to do work, right? But do you need a kitab on fazail food? Or fazail, chops or fazail chips? Do you need any kitab on that? You want that, you just want it, it's a demand. But why aren't the chops prepared today? It's a demand. Doesn't that become a demand? But did you make that demand on yourself? Why didn't you do your tahajjud today? Why didn't you do your israq today? The two siparas that you were doing every day, why wasn't the two siparas completed? That means those colors haven't rubbed on. Or you're sleeping and you haven't yet completed your two siparas. How can you sleep today? Yes, you can move that food, you can move that meal from its time to ensure that the two siparas that you were doing every day, that two siparas are done like you were doing it every day. But now we reverse the whole thing around. But why, you know, after Maghrib, it's like a sunnah muakkada in the home that the food must be prepared. And on a Saturday, then there must be all that, what they call it, samosa, savouries. There must be all those savouries on a Saturday. Why isn't that prepared? Nothing you prepared. On a Saturday night, such a big guna you made. Yeah. We just had a curry kisi for the afternoon that you prepared. We left it on the table after Maghrib. What do you think of us? Such a big guna, such a big sin you committed. You see our moods. Did we ever take off with ourselves, you know, I didn't do the two siparas. You're not going to go home until you don't complete the two siparas. You're not going to eat. One morsel you're not going to take down. So for this, you don't need that fazail food kitab. So what we're getting at, this amal, this routine, this behavior, this conduct, these ways, must become natural. One youngster was asking me, today again he asked me, you know, when these youngsters ask, a lot of them ask with sincerity, they're good at heart, but now because they're young, 16, 17, 18, and if they ask those questions, then we appreciate those questions, because of the ages, right? But obviously a person advanced in age now, you know, if he asks those questions or he behaves in a certain way, you don't appreciate it. Now you see a person of 50, 60 years of age now, has got a colorful kurta with all the embroidery and all the lining and all that. Hey, bhai, chacha, which world, kaun si dunya mein rehte? Now he's at that age, you don't expect to see those things in him. Yeah, he's a small little boy now, 3-4 years of age, wearing some shiny kurta or the Pakistani murat topi's got. So he says, what the while? Oh no, mine is a child now, 3-year-old, 4-year-old. So he got that with that V-shape and that mirrors on top. It's alright. For his age, you say it's alright. You accept it for his age. But now at the age of 60, 65, you're doing all these type of things. Which world are you living in? So if a small child, based on the same principle, if a small child is playing something like snake and ladders or ludo and all that, she's alright. A big old chacha is doing this now. Chacha, now, wake up. Man. He's doing snake and ladder, ludo with his children, carom board with his children. We will not say that he's doing haram. But really, there's something that is short here, something that is missing. That at his age, he's not supposed to be behaving like this. He's supposed to be amusing himself a little bit, alright, that's understandable. But now, to dedicate that amount of time towards all these things here, it's not the right thing. It's not the most appropriate thing. So this youngster asked me, alright, well, but you know, are you for sports or not? Soccer, cricket and all that, are you for that? Now, I like the question and I like these youngsters to come and talk to me freely. They mustn't feel overawed, I got an occasion to speak to them. See, everybody's life is short, and I need to open the mind, right? When I open your mind, then it's a whole train of thought, you know, like a whole river has opened up to him, a whole river of education has opened up to him. But I need to open the child's mind. Maybe he doesn't practice it, but he's got the theory, that concept, he's got it deep within him. One day it will open out, one day he'll want to practice it. So I enjoy this type of questions when they ask it, especially when it's done out of sincerity, with a passion to make amal and to practice upon it. So he asked me, how about sports and soccer and cricket, etc., etc. So I can understand the child's age, 15, 16, there's a lot of excitement in him, there's a lot of activity in his heart and mind. You know, I can't take him to the other extreme. You know what, the deen is really burning now, and there's so much of challenges against deen, and you're wasting your time into this thing here. You know, you must sacrifice everything for deen. At that age, I can't tell him this much. You have to bring him to that level, but gradually, he doesn't become frustrated, and it mustn't be that we bring him to such a level that he can't maintain. You take the child, or you take a motor car all the time, from 0 to 200, what will happen? You will blow the engine, isn't it? So you take the thing and you take it gradually, so that person can maintain the whole thing. So I explained to him, see, unorganized, you know, kicking the ball here and there, cricket, whatever you're doing, but unorganized, not official, now and then you're just playing, kicking around, it's alright. Provided it's not organized, it's not professional, it's not done as a passion, just a bit of amusement you are doing it for, it's alright. So it was an intelligent student, said, but why you are against professional and organized sport, why are you against that? I enjoy that question, you see, I enjoy this question here. And the impression that it brings to my mind, that he wants to learn, he wants to understand. And then I need to explain to him. I can't become emotional, say, better listen to your Kabir, just carry on. So I can't do that as well. Now, how to open the child's mind? So I asked him, see, was there ever an occasion that you were caught up with some type of a sport, cricket, soccer, football, tennis, or table tennis or something, or television or something, right? And at the heat of the moment, your mother asked you, you know, better go and get some milk from that neighbor's yard, you know. That boy's yard or that Kala's house, go and fetch it. So it happened. Something like that did happen in my life. So when that type of things happened, then tell me, what was your response at that time exactly? At that time, what was your response? She said, no, I frowned. Hey, you know, Ma, you could only find me. At the time, the heat of the sport, I'm involved in this now. And then at this time, you could only get me to go and do this errand. So there's so much other Hashim, Ismail, Yusuf, everybody, go and ask them to do it. Now, you could only find me. You take advantage of me. You know, what is this all about? You don't respect my time. You don't respect the activity that I'm doing. So now, this is why I don't like this type of a professional sport, organized sport. So when you get caught up in that professional sport, organized sport, then everything becomes secondary. Your namaz becomes secondary, your parents become secondary, your elders become secondary, everything else becomes secondary. And that becomes the primary thing. Running after that, your mind is consumed by that, your heart is taken away by that, your time has been robbed, you robbed of your time, because that became a passion. It became an activity, it became the theme of your life, it became the real goal of your life. And you don't want to sacrifice, you don't want to make any adjustments. Now, deen is such, life is such, that you have to keep making adjustments. Someone passed away, right? You need to make adjustments for that. You plan something, but someone passed away. You make adjustments for that, right? Someone needs your khidmat, you need to make adjustments for that. So now we planned a holiday, now we have to go for that holiday, you know how much we spend. Bhai, this is what deen is teaching you. That prioritize, look at the occasion, look at the situation and adjust yourself afterwards accordingly, right? And if you've learned that you have learned deen. So Mawla just explains a little bit more. This youngster wants to learn, so he's just explains this a little bit more. I tell him, alright, let me show you one real life incident. That I kind of came across, someone came and asked me, whatever it was, the family of those people concerned, they came to me. Now it's two wealthy people, right? Wife and husband. Wealthy, running good lives. Alright, moderately pious as well. We won't say they're impious. moderately pious as well. Now, this time of the year comes about holiday time, right? This last 2 months, December and January, these last 2 months come up, you know. And when this time comes up, then everybody's mind is not right. Whether pious or impious, everybody's mind is not right. It's not settled, not balanced. There is some type of inconsistency in the mind around this time. Right? Now, before that time comes, now, the wife is making tashkil, the children are making tashkil, you know, whole year we work for you. And what have you done for us? What is the payback now? You need to, you know, you owe it to us that you must take us for the umrah, you must do this for us, do that for us. You know? So they are working your mind. At least 1-2 months in advance, you know. Abba, December is coming, you know that. Abba, you know, you got so much in the bank, we check all your balances and all that, we see what you've got. So you can't afford this. It's quite comfortable. You can't say that you can't afford this. So we know what you are worth. So they're in control of everything. And they're making a tashkil long in advance. That you must do this, do this, do this. You don't want to do it. You've got an aging mother or someone. And she needs your khidmat. And now these people are eating up your brains. You don't give in to them. Then for a whole year you have to keep listening to the broken record. You know, yeah, you know, our holiday time. And this is what you did to us. Our holiday time and this is what you did to us. We don't mean anything. We're just like a piece of furniture. You just placed it there. You got us very easily and cheaply. So you just placed us as a furniture in one corner of the house. And we just have to sit and park and catch flies whole day. No excitement. Nothing in our life. Nothing interesting. The whole world is going. What do we do? See, the tashkil is coming very strong. Can't sleep. You can't get up. Can't have a meal decently. This thing is carrying on. You know. Eventually, said, all right, hey, I will do something. After all, they're doing so much for me. I don't want to keep listening to this story. Let me organize some tickets and all that. All the tickets. He's got the money. Multi-millionaire, so he's got the money for all that. Booked on, going on. Right? For his aged mother, now they've got a nurse to come and look after the nurse and all that. Look after her. And they're gone. Right? Now it's approaching that season where they really get mad. Even the workers get mad. Now for the 2-3 days or whatever, she said she's not coming. The nurse says, I'm not coming, alright. The 4th day she came up. She opens the door, she's got the key to the house, so she comes in to find a decomposed rotting body. In the summer's heat now, and a decomposed rotting body she needs to see. Right? She's a nurse, so her feelings will be cold. Obviously now she needs to follow procedure, whatever, phone the hospital, raise people, etc., and tell them what's happened to your mother, etc., and continue. I ask you, those people that went for Umrah, can they forgive themselves for the rest of their lives? Okay, this is what we did to our mother. Right? Now, this is all what Deen is all about. How to prioritize, right? What is first, what is second, what is third? You put yourself into the shoes of that aging woman, and your children have dumped you in that house to the mercy of a caregiver and then gone off Umrah. How do you feel? How do you like it? Today you are doing the same, but tomorrow when you in that same shoe, how would you feel if they do the same to you? But then what you doing and how you practicing and how you conducting yourself, the same treatment will come to you eventually. How you treat the child. How you treat the situation. See, everything in deen, everything has got a time, everything has got a place, everything has got an occasion. You understand the occasion and you work it accordingly, inshallah nothing will go bad for you. But you understand what is deen. That's what I'm saying. The Al-Mu'tami Sahib says that the people in the past, the emphasis that they laid upon tarbiyat, upon the right understanding, the right behavior, the right conduct, was far, far greater than the emphasis they laid upon education. Now show me if this type of a level and balance is maintained or not. It's either just strive, either just education. But that level on personal reformation and correction, is it there anywhere? Whether in the madrasa, whether in the jamaat, whether anywhere. I ask you, is that level of concentration on the right type of conduct, right type of behavior, right type of values, is it found anywhere now today? As though this has become extinct. Just struggle and carry on, and just carry on doing things. But the level of understanding, tarbiyat, understanding how to prioritize, is it found anywhere? When we don't have this value system and we don't have a consistent plan, really, we are creating a monster for ourselves. You know, when they talk of education, etc., and sometimes many of the problems that are within the child is a result of the parents' behavior towards the child. And we now will reprimand the child. See, these today's children, you know, 21st century, we're coming closer to Qiyamah, they're so defiant, they're so rebellious. But do we understand that partly we are also responsible for this type of behavior? Do we understand that? A small little example is, you know, like, our people are in that holiday mood, you know, go 2 weeks, 3 weeks, break away, right? We're in that type of mood, and you can't get ourselves freed from that, right? Now, when we're in that mood, now think to yourself, what happens in a holiday, right? Now, you are at home, for example, so you've got some levels of discipline, right? Like in most of our old Muslims' homes, you'll find, right, the father is telling the child, that you'll come here, my nephews may come to the house, but you're not going to bring anybody that you want into the house. That was a system. Your friends are not going to bring to the house. You'll talk to them outside the house, and that's it. You're not going to bring anybody and everybody into the house. By Maghrib, you must be in the house. I don't want to hear anything. This is my house, you're living under my shelter, you need to see Maghrib time, you're at home, performing your namaz, eating, doing your homework, sleeping right time, so you're good, safe for tomorrow's day. To go to school, whatever you're doing, but you're in good shape for that. So there was some system, that system brought some results. Right? There was some respect, there was some system, and there was some direction. And we saw the good in that direction. Right? So now, we have got certain values when we're at home. Now suddenly, now this holiday has become a culture. When it becomes a culture, then it's a demand, it's a right. Before it was a privilege, now it's a right. I'm going to show you what problems do take place, what I go through, what I understand, what I see, and what I hear. Now, when you're on that holiday now, whether you're in Umrah, whether you're in the Bergs, wherever you are going for a holiday, it's a good, joyous environment or an evil environment. So, there was a certain value system that you maintained at home. I ask you, when you're on the trip, when you're on the journey, do you maintain that value system diligently? Or you say, now, you know, if you're going to be too diligent on the child, then the child will say, you know, at home you were like a monster to us. Holidays also, we're not free to do what we want to do. See? Because of this type of preconceived notion that you relax all the laws and the values. Now, do you know what you have done for this child? Really what you have done for this child is you have created a split personality in this child. Because the child doesn't know what is the system. Now, this is one moment I did the wrong. And I was thanked for it, I was reprimanded for it. At another occasion, I committed the same wrong, but everything was relaxed. They didn't tell me anything about it. Everybody just turned a blind eye. Everything was like perfectly normal. But why is this inconsistency? Is this right or wrong? So who created this type of a split personality into this child? Understand who created it. Then I say, this is the one wrong that happens in this holiday. And that's why I shudder. But there's already approaches, the wrongs that I hear, you know, what happens. I'm just telling you one, two things. But what happens, really, it just gives me a ghabra from the beginning of the holiday until the end. You know. Kisi tarah se khuda khuda karke is chutti ko khatam karte hai. Just have to turn to Allah, just finish this up very quickly. Because people are really, really, really missing it. They're really getting robbed of their iman, of their righteousness, of their values. They're getting robbed. And they don't realize that they're getting robbed of it. Sometimes it happens that you put the child, you put those people into a holiday mood. Right? See what I'm showing, what parents do. Our child has completed the Quran Sharif. We're seeing what's going on. I say, we'll take you for an Umrah. Or, he's completed the Quran Sharif. Let's give him the latest phone. Right? What's going to happen to the child? Do you know what's going to happen to the child? Who bears the brunt? And who sees to the consequence of all what you have given the child? Right? Now for the 5-6 weeks that the child is away, there's no principles left. Now he's coming back and start off again. Then this type of a thing, first it was a privilege, now it becomes a right. Now this child has to move on in life. She or he have to get married and to continue. When they're continuing with their life, now will they be able to maintain this type of a system? Will the husband be able to maintain this? And the husband doesn't maintain it, the wife is crying. You know, when I was with my father, I should get all these luxuries and comforts. And now I don't get it. Right? people actually come and complain. You know, when the woman was supposed to get married, then they did everything to work, make the marriage, to make the marriage happen. As soon as I got into the marriage, then the girl now, she began to show me herself. You know me, I come from a very, very wealthy background. You know? Now what is it? What is it? It's a reminder that you need to also keep up to my standard. I won't last with you. So that wealth has actually gone in deep into that heart. Now it's an addiction, and this person can't manage it. He can't manage it. Meanwhile, he's got 1-2 children. So he can't separate. He can't manage this nikah. So what must he do? How must he carry on? How must he continue? But who's brought this level to this level of addiction? I need to go for this holiday. I need to go for this type of umrah, whatever it is. Okay. You would get youngsters coming up. Talk of real situation, Hafiz Saab, whatever. Say, no, I'm Hafiz Saab, I'm also a doctor, right? Or I'm also an accountant, I'm also an engineer. We are working for a big conglomerate. We are working for a big corporate we are working for. It's a multinational company, right? So it's all, when it's a corporate, then everybody, everything works. Every haram works in a corporate. That's the meaning of corporate. Every haram must be permissible for it to qualify as a corporate, right? Now I'm working, there's women there, everybody chatting around. My wife is gone for umrah. And these people are flirting and flaunting with me. Now what do I do? How long do I resist? I'm going to do haram now, then I'm off. I don't have the finances to go and live this type of a life. And if I have the finances, then this job of mine, I need to respect. Just now, they will just now soft talk me, and then what happens? I need to respect this job here, I can't go there. Right? And if I'm here, then I'm getting involved in haram. And this woman is out. Now what do I do with my life? But you see the problem that comes up. This culture, this holiday culture. As Umar radiallahu anhu, what he wanted for this ummah, that they must be occupied. A full day. I don't say you don't go for this thing. Once in a blue moon, once in 10, 12 years you went, it's not an addiction. For holiday, once in 3, 4 years, 5 years you went, it's not an addiction. But every now and then, oh, must go for a drive, must go for this, go for that. Everybody can't afford it. That life has to continue. That wife, that girl has to go. She made a choice, or you made a choice, whatever it is. Now, it's some compromises that have to be made from this side, from that side, some compromises have to be made. And you want them to continue like that, then you can't rule that life. It's their life. The father-in-law can't then start ruling their lives. They do this and cut here and make an adjustment there. The boy wants to ask then, he wants to know, who did I marry? That's what he'll ask. Did I marry you or did I marry that house? I didn't marry that home, I married you. So we need to decide what we need to do. For ourselves and for our children, what must be done, we need to decide. And we get the third person influencing us and deciding for us, then it's not on. Like you as a father-in-law won't want anybody else to influence your decision. So that child also is now a father. Or he's a husband, like your husband. He doesn't want you to be influencing him. No, you have got a different standard for yourself and a different standard for the child. I'm different. No, I'm totally different. I don't want to be compared against the other person. See the imbalance, the incorrect reasoning, and the problem that comes up. Mostly I'm talking about the problems that I hear and I face and I talk, right? And I hear all the time, right? So now this person is in a problem, he's in a fix now, his wife is gone, what does he do here? How does he carry on? But if he gets into a haram relationship, isn't his wife also partly responsible for this? Then she'll cry after that, you're flirting with other girls, right? You see your phone, you got something else. But now isn't she responsible also for this type of behavior? Yes, he's responsible, but partly she's also responsible for this type of a behavior. So anyway, you're talking of Hazrat Mawlana Sayyid Khan Sahib Rahmatullahi, and perhaps with his barakah, a lot of things came to the fore, right? All things came. Here's Buzurganuddin and the goodness in the, in just talking about them, Allah puts ideas in your mind. So a privilege is taken as a privilege, right? A right is taken as a right, and a privilege as a privilege. You keep it at that, you can maintain the balance. And you take it beyond it, then you can't maintain the balance. You need it now, and then what? You have set a standard into that child of yours. And that child wants every year. And if he doesn't get it, or she doesn't get it, then she's getting into a depression. I'm taught, ask me, I'll tell you. The child doesn't get this type of a privilege, and this type of a comfort, now she's getting into a depression. But who brought it? Now, it's easy for that father-in-law to say, no, you're the problem, you know. You can't even afford this type of comfort for my wife, for my daughter. So it's easy for him to shift the responsibility to you.
But he's not coming to terms with realities. That he brought these problems to himself. So a privilege was supposed to be a privilege. You understood that this was a girl. She'd have to get married. She'd have to go live with someone else. And then the husband will be her boss. I won't be her boss. Anyway, what Sayyid Khan Sahib Rahmatullah says, that we were in that area and we had to thereafter go for the talim. I presented myself in the talim and I had to take control over the whole situation. I took control over the situation and I gave some advice. Went on to give that advice, what is talim all about and what is tabligh all about, etc., etc. I continued in a very calm, relaxed manner. The whole talim ended, like tabligh talim, 1.5-2 hours they have it. The whole thing ended. Then towards the afternoon, he called us for lunch again, so we went back. It's my uncle, so I had to go. So my uncle began to speak to me. And he says, you know, last night I asked you, and I asked you a statement, I made a statement that was really, you know, in today's word you would say, either spurring you up, or either intimidating, you know. It's an intimidating question I asked you. So, but I saw you, very brilliantly you just digressed, you just shifted off the topic. I understood what was going on, but I didn't want to get too personal, you know. I just left you. But I think what you did was the better thing. Because, now this uncle is speaking to Maulana, he says, I think what you did was the better thing. Because, had you given me an answer that time at night, you know, at that moment of the night, you know, when you had given me that answer, that I was on the attack, I wanted to just attack you and show you that I am right. See, that's what happened to a man. He wants to show at any given point that I put on the pants. See? Right. So I was on the attack at that time and I wanted to show you that, no, what I'm saying is right. But everything was over. Now we relaxed. I'm very, very relaxed and calm and composed. And now you explain the whole thing. You introduce the whole Jamaat work. What is it all about? Now, really, you have opened up an entire dimension of thought. Now, I'm looking at this whole Jamaat work as though it's a need, it's a compulsory thing, it's a faras thing now. Now, my mind is just opened up to it now. But had you opened it up to me at that moment, never would my mind open up. See, what I was getting at is, every situation is not a situation to enter into a discussion, into a debate, into an argument. There are situations where you get into a discussion. There are people that you can get into a discussion. There are occasions that you get into a discussion, but every situation, and to bring it to the level of a discussion, is not right. Because that person's mind is not tuned. He's not prepared for that discussion. And you're giving it to him. Perhaps out of respect, he may just keep quiet. But is he ready to accept what you are saying? So you find the right occasions to get into a discussion. Otherwise, just have a general talk. A little bit of 6 points, a little bit of nasihat, just end it up there. Don't go beyond that. Don't become too personal. Right. So if a person feels that Islam has got no procedure, he's got no system, really he's wrong. He's got system, there's a lot of procedure. But when we hear a story, we just hear it as a story. What is exciting, what's juicy in that? And we just look at the juicy side of the story. We're not looking really what is the lesson that is supposed to be learnt here. See, two people come to Nabi Sassam with their problem, right? So Nabi Sassam presides over the case after listening to both sides. Then judgment is awarded in favor of one person. Obviously, it'll go against the next person. So that person who the judgment had went against, he says, Hasbi Allah. Allah Pak is sufficient for me. Rasulullah wasn't happy for this person to make the statement on this occasion. But I ask you, is there any wrong in these words? I ask you, is there any wrong in these words? But then why did Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam express his displeasure? A simple illustration to show why he expressed his displeasure. You sent your child to do his matric exams, right? Whole year, he messed the whole year up. He didn't use his time correctly, no studying, no preparation, nothing. Absolutely no preparation. At the end of the year, he failed. And he brings his report and he says, "Father, you know what? I failed. Hasbi Allah." Would the father be excited with his answer? What he said, was it wrong? It wasn't wrong what he said, but was that the right statement for him to make at that occasion? So Nabi Sallam explained to the Sahabi, see, إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَيُلُومُ عَلَى الْعَجْزِ. When you don't take intellectual procedures, عَلَيْكَ بِالْكَيْسِ, in other words, follow intellectual procedures, and you don't adopt intellectual procedures, what the procedure was required, you don't adopt that, right? And then you fail, and then you say, Hasbi Allah, then it's a wrong occasion to say the right word, but a wrong occasion, really it's not behoving a person. It's a right word, but said at the wrong occasion. So what you're supposed to be doing is that alayka bil case, you follow intellectual procedures, right? You follow the intellect, whatever procedure was required, or you know there's a case that is impending, right? Then this case, what type of procedures it requires? What preparations I must make? Right? They're talking to me about SARS, right? SARS is going to come, right? So when they're going to come, now what procedures I must take? What I must do? So he's following all those procedures, and thereafter he followed the procedures, made dua. Whatever happens after that, then now say, Hasbi Allah. Now Allah Pak is sufficient for me, whether it went for me or against me. But I followed the procedure, and thereafter I leave it in the hands of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, but not following procedure, and thereafter just saying, Hasbi Allah, is that the right thing to do? It's not the right thing to do. So then, فَإِذَا غَلَبَكَ أَمْرٌ فَقُلْ حَسْبِيَ اللَّهِ. Now you followed all that intellectual procedure, whatever you're supposed to be doing, you followed everything, and thereafter something turned against you, now you say Alhamdulillah, or say حَسْبِيَ اللَّهِ, Allah Pak is sufficient, maybe Allah Pak will bring something that is better for me. I didn't win here, but soon Allah Ta'ala will give me something that I will really, really be cheered up, and it will be a compensation for all my past losses. So Islam has got system, Islam has got procedures. Islam wants us to follow those procedures, those systems, right? In fact, I tell you, even in our life, in this non-Muslim country, in a non-Muslim country, there's a situation that we don't become fired up and emotional and start running and shouting and raving and ranting. You see, what is the procedure? What do we do? In this situation, what are we supposed to be doing? What are our legal procedures? We do that, even the law will begin to respect us, and they'll be afraid for us. So these people know about intellectual procedures, legal procedures, they know, they follow it up, so we can't take advantage of them. They will also respect. Otherwise, they'll lose respect. No, unruly class, they've got no procedures, they don't know the legal system, nothing they know. So they will also begin to lose respect for us. Allah Ta'ala Tawfiq Asif.